So today we are going to finish, I hope, the discussion about the path integral quantization or the functional integration of the scalar free field. And I'll start to discuss, just at an introductory level, the much more interesting, of course, and physical case of the interacting theory on the example of the standard phi to the fourth theory, which is somehow the toy model. Well, it's more than a toy model, but the simplest case where one can discuss interactions. Okay, so remember what we have been doing the last two lectures. We have been considering the scalar free field. So phi of x is a real scalar field, so it means that this belongs to R. This is a real variable. X belongs to, and I was discussing the Euclidean case, so this is RD, this is a vector in RD. I'm discussing the Euclidean case. And for the Euclidean quantum field theory, the functional integral that allows to define by path integral method the quantum theory, hopefully, has this form. We integrate over all possible configuration of field with some measure, time exponential of minus, okay, there is an h bar, but I'm going to set, for simplicity, h bar to zero, to one, I'm sorry, h bar. Just to normalize things. And this is the Euclidean action. So the Euclidean action is just integral d dx 1/2 of d mu phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared, which can be rewritten up to boundary term as d dx 1/2 of phi times minus Laplacian of phi plus m squared phi squared. Okay, so let me rewrite this way, which shows that the action is a quadratic form on x. This is a Laplacian. And therefore, this is a Gaussian functional integral. And this allows very easily to compute what's called the propagator or correlation function. For two fields, which is defined as the expectation value of phi at the point x1 and the phi at the point x2, where this is expectation value with this measure. And we have seen this object that was called g of x1 minus x2 is just the Fourier transform. This is d. Okay. Of a Lorentzian function k squared plus m squared. So there is an exponential I. K times x, where this is a vector. So kx means k mu x mu. Those are Euclidean ordinates. And k squared is just sum over mu of k mu squared. We are in Euclidean metric, so the metric is 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. So we have it. This signature. Okay, and we have been studying various properties of this object. So we have seen in particular that this propagator, this function g of x, behaves when x goes to zero as the modulus of x to the power 2 minus the dimension of space-time, d-dimensional space-time, so that it's present some short distance singularity, which is called ultraviolet, provided that the dimension of space-time is larger or equal to 2. Yes?
Lovely question. We are in Euclidean space, but the k mu x mu is always with the minus sign, or it's like the usual Euclidean scalar product?
This is the Euclidean, so it's just a norm of the vector.
Okay, so without the eta mu this time?
Yeah. Well, you can write it. Okay, if you want to. If you want. You can write it like that, but this is an eta mu nu, which is Euclidean metric. So eta mu nu Euclidean is just delta mu nu. And therefore, its inverse is also delta mu nu. It's just the ordinary metric. But you can write that in covariant coordinates. So this is the Euclidean metric tensor that I wrote here. Okay, you call it eta. Okay. So everything can be made Euclidean. Okay. And I showed that, in fact, this short distance singularity corresponds to the fact that in the path integrals, the field configuration that dominates are in fact distribution with some kind of a, well, under control, but very singular behavior at short distance. So now one thing that remains to be done in order to be sure that we are using this method of path integral quantization in a correct way is to check whether we recover the results of canonical quantization, whether we have constructed the same quantum theory. Okay. So what we have to check, I want to check when I go from Euclidean back to Minkowski, do I get the free field obtained by canonical quantization. This is going to be the check. So for this, we start from this object, the Euclidean Green function. We start from the Euclidean correlation function, or propagator. So let me call it GE for Euclidean. And make a weak rotation. And check, do I get something sensible? OK, so now one has to be a bit more. So now one has to pay attention of what we are doing. So, okay. So in Euclidean coordinates, so x that I'm going to call xe, this is an Euclidean spacetime vector. I just have to check that I'm using consistent notation. This is, let me remember, this was my first coordinate in space-time. Euclidean space-time was the Euclidean time. So this was what we call tau in what we did in quantum mechanics. And the rest, the d minus 1, are the spatial coordinates, x. And if we want to make a weak rotation, we want to go to a space-time vector in Minkowski space, whose coordinates are physical time, and space coordinates. So this is physical time. And this is space. Okay. And we know from what we saw in non-relativistic quantum mechanics that to go from this to this, we have to perform a weak rotation. And the weak rotation, let me draw it in this way. Okay, we remember the weak rotation we had here, physical time. Here we had imaginary physical time. And this coordinate was tau, Euclidean time. And this is the weak rotation. Yes, going from this to this. Okay. Which means that the relation between tau and t is that tau is minus I times t. Okay? So that when tau is real and positive, t is imaginary with a negative imaginary part. And when tau, this is the tau coordinate, tau is imaginary, like that, t becomes real. Okay? Oh. No, this is plus, of course. I always made a mistake. Okay. When t is imaginary with a negative imaginary part, tau is real positive. Okay? So this is what we are going to do. We start from this expression, and we make a weak rotation like that. Or if you want to be more precise, let me now write the tau axis. This is Euclidean time. Time. Here now, I just rotated this figure by pi over 2. So this is t, physical time. And I'm going to make a rotation. For instance, if I make a rotation by an angle theta, I write my time as here, this is e I theta times tau. Okay. So this is going to be the weak rotation. Okay, so now we have written the Euclidean propagator as a Fourier transform, so as an integral over Euclidean momenta. So, for the momenta, what is the Euclidean momentum and what is going to be the physical momentum? So, the Euclidean momentum, let's call it Ke, is given by those coordinates. So, it's K mu with mu indices lower. So this is going to be, let me write this K0 and K. So this is going to be the space momentum. Okay, because space variables are not affected by this weak coordinate, but this is going to be what I called an Euclidean momentum. Okay, this is not a standard denomination, so that's a denomination I find useful. But, okay. And now you see that if I make this transformation, so if I change tau into EI theta as something which is real, in this integral, I have to make the opposite rotation on K in order for this integral to be well defined with this still being a phase. So when I make transformation like that, like this one, I have to perform, so when I perform a Vic rotation on time, I have to perform, if you want, an anti-Vic rotation on K naught in order. So that K, this is the first coordinate, K naught times X, well, let's designate this X naught if you want, so that K naught X naught stays real. You see? The product of this tau by this K, K naught, so X naught is tau, stays real. So I identify tau with the same thing that X naught, the first coordinate. So this means that if I rotate the Euclidean time variable in the complex plane by an angle theta, what I have to do is simultaneously, this is the K naught integral. So you see, in this Fourier transform, the K naught integral is done on the real axis. And I have to rotate this integration path by an angle minus theta. So that this stays real and the integral still makes sense. So that's the proper, this is a recipe, this is a proper recipe to make an analytic continuation of GE or complex. Analytic continuation in time. So that's the way, the mathematical way we can define an analytic continuation in this variable to go from tau to t. Okay. So then, when so the recipe is, we write that in this formula, tau is I t. Now this is t. And simultaneously, k naught. So this is the K plane. This is the K plane. And in the K plane here, when you have performed the Vic rotation, now the Euclidean first coordinate, the momenta, is going to be imaginary with a negative imaginary part. So K naught is going to be 1 over I times something which is real and positive. In this case, that I'm going to call omega, that's a pulsation. So that's just a definition. So here, this is k naught, and the coordinate along this line, I'll call it omega. So that now, the momentum the physical momentum, the momentum which is conjugate to position in Minkowski space, the physical momentum is, I denote it, omega and k. So k is unchanged, but by this transformation, k0, this is a capital k0. I'm sorry, I am a bit imprecise about my notation. K0 is transformed in 1 over I omega, and I denote k, omega, and the spatial momentum. So this is space momentum. And this is going, as we have seen, correspond to some energy or pulsation. Or it's a time frequency. Okay? So when we do that, of course, so we make just this change of variable in the integral. And we make this change of notation. Okay, so we take this integral and we make those change of variable in the integral. So what do we get? We get that the propagator now is okay, so first we have an integral over k naught. So let's be precise. We have an integral. G Euclidean is an integral over k naught divided by 2 pi. Then there is an integral over d minus 1 of k divided by 2 pi to the power d minus 1. And I'm not going to touch that, this. And then I have exponential I k naught times tau plus k times x divided by k naught squared plus k squared plus m squared. Okay, this was the original integral. We make the change of variable, which is the Vic rotation. This change of variable. And what do we get? So this becomes, so we make a change of variable k naught. So this is going to be an integral for dw over 2 pi, but with a factor minus I. And we still integrate from minus infinity to plus infinity. Of course, we integrate plus infinity. Then we have an integrate over d minus 1 of k divided by 2 pi d minus 1. We haven't changed this. Here, we still have exponential of I now. So I change k naught in 1 over I omega, but I change tau in it, so this stays omega times t plus k times x. Okay. And on the denominator, what I get now is minus omega squared plus k squared plus m squared. Okay, so this is expression for the propagator in physical time and physical space. So we obtain just by making a analytic continuation in tau of this expression. So we just have been very careful. Yes?
Question about the bounds of the integral. If we do the change of variables, we shouldn't technically put minus I times infinity and plus I times infinity for omega.
Yes. So you would like to take into account what's happening there. That's what That, is this your question?
Maybe, I
yeah.
don't know.
You ask what's happening at infinity.
No, I'm asking because when we have an integration and we perform a change of variables,
yes.
we need to, let's say, look at the bounds and transform them. But
yes.
here we don't transform. The bounds of K0 is equal to the bounds of omega.
Yeah,
and
no, so.
Put the I in the bounds of omega.
Yeah. No, but that's because, okay, so in fact, what I'm doing is it, I take this.
Yes.
And I transform this in this times this. That's what I should do. Because I'm making analytic continuation and treat the integration over K naught as a...
Oh, you are just...
So, in fact, there is also this term at infinity. But one can check that this term as infinity is zero. Because it's something which is exponential. It's something which is exponential of I T W... Omega, and for instance, an omega here, you know, you see, in this domain, in this whole plane here, quarter of plane, omega has a positive imaginary part. So we have a positive, so if we take, consider what's happening for this, we have a positive, very large imaginary part times I. So this gives a factor exponential minus something big. So therefore, this gives zero.
And for the one on the left?
And the one on the left, exactly the same thing. Because here, the imagined, here, omega has a negative imaginary part, but but at the same time, what's happening? Well, by symmetry, I think it's the same one. Yeah, but at the same time, the real part of omega is negative. So I think, but everything works out. I'm sorry, I'm a bit cheating.
Okay.
But by symmetry, it's clear that what if it works there, it works there. What wouldn't work would be to consider this integration here.
So
this would be bad.
We slightly modify the shape of the path.
Yes.
So
So this is a bit sketchy, I agree. You raise a good point that I wanted to keep on the carpet, under the carpet. No, but that's fine. Okay. But it's working. Okay. So now there is one last subtle point, a bit subtle, and that's the beauty. You have to remember that in the denominator, there are poles. So the original denominator, 1 over k naught squared plus k squared plus m squared, so in this original integral, K naught, it has two poles at K naught equal plus or minus I square root of K squared plus M squared. And remember, I discussed briefly that when detailing how you compute the large distance behavior of the propagator. So there is a pole here, single pole. And here you have another single pole. Okay. So now when we perform this weak rotation that I draw here, okay, I start from this, I rotate, I end up with a contour of integration. Let me find, I've lost my, okay. This, I end up with a contour of integration that deal with a pole in a very specific way. Deals in the pole like that. See? Because I start from this, yeah, I turn it this way. I don't turn it this way. So this is the way the singularity which are associated to the pole are dealt with in this integral. So in this integral, so in the final integral, over omega now, so in the omega plane, remember, the omega is related to k naught by this. So in the omega plane, you still have two poles, one here, and one here. We have poles at omega equal plus or minus square root of k squared plus m squared. But these poles are dealt, I'm sorry, these poles are dealt in this way. And this is the origin. So, if you like, you can rewrite this integral by just putting the minus and minus sign here. This is, in fact, the Fourier transform, so the Fourier transform representation of the Feynman propagator. So this prescription, the prescription of integration, or integration for the Feynman propagator. So you can show that this corresponds simply to d omega over 2 pi, dk over 2 pi to the power d minus 1. And then you get the factor I, EI omega t plus kx divided by, and if I change, I get omega squared minus k squared minus m squared, and with the plus I zero plus prescription, because that corresponds to have this and this. So the object we have constructed by weak rotation is just the Feynman propagator, which is a function of frequency and of t and x. Okay. And this corresponds to, in canonical quantization, to the vacuum to vacuum matrix element of the time ordered product of the field operator phi at the origin and the phi, the field operator at a point x with x equal t x. And this is the time ordered product. And these are the field operators constructed in canonical quantization. I'm sorry if this is a bit hidden by that. Okay. So this result is what we expected. We start from the Euclidean propagator. We make a weak rotation. We are careful about how we perform the weak rotation in a mathematically consistent way. And we recover Feynman propagator, which is an expectation value in the vacuum of the time-ordered product of the corresponding operators. So everything is fine. So path integrals equals canonical quantization, at least for this object.
Yeah? Sorry, I have the same question as before, but here we are in Minkowski space, but we don't have the minus signs. So how does that happen in the exponential?
That's just because here K has still lower indices. So omega K as a component of this vector. Okay. While usually, so I never remember if lower indices lower means that this is a covariant vector or a contravariant vector. I once wrote some lecture notes when I said one convention, and then I was told by some of the experts that Cecile de Witt, that I made a mistake. I, of course, took the wrong convention. So what people call usually the four-dimensional momentum, which is K mu. And this is usually what is the energy and the momentum. Okay. But the relation, as we have written here, the relation between K mu and K mu is that K mu equal eta mu mu K nu. And now this is not the eta Euclidean, but this is the eta Minkowski. So K0 is minus K0, and K mu, or space direction, is K mu if mu equal 1 to D space. Everything is consistent. Okay, so that's fine. The final results of this calculation, which is just a bit lengthy because one has to be careful on what to do, is that for this, the two-point function, the results of quantization by path integrals, functional integrals, gives the same results than the results of canonical quantization. Okay. Oh, get this. Feynman operator. Oh. I am writing. Okay. So this was my third. See, this was the first one. Just want to keep track of what I'm doing. Okay, so of course this, in principle, is not enough. We should show that for all matrix elements, we get the same result. Not only for this matrix element, but for the free field, it turns out that this is enough, because you have seen in the QFT1 course, that all correlation functions, so expectation value of time ordered product of an arbitrary number of field operator, can be reconstructed out of this object through a very nice result, which is called Wick theorem. What we have just now to prove is that what's called the Wick theorem holds or functional integral. Quantization. Okay, so you explain what Vic theorem is, I hope. Okay. So Vic theorem is a theorem about correlation function of products of many operators. So let's go back to the Euclidean formalism, because if it's true in the Euclidean theory, it's going to be true in the real-time physical theory. So let me consider in the Euclidean setting, again, just the expectation value of a product now of phi of x1, phi of x2, up to phi of xn, which is defined exactly as we did before by path integral, d phi exponential of minus the action of phi times phi of x1 product of phi of xn divided by integral d phi exponential minus s of phi. Okay, so of course, I omit subscript E everywhere, but this is for the Euclidean theory. Okay, so of course, if n is odd, so n equal to m plus 1, this is 0. By parity, we have an integral over an even function times an odd function. But for even n, this is non-zero. Okay. So how do we compute this in integral quantization? Well, you just have to remember one of the nice theorems about Gaussian, the theory of Gaussian random variable. Which has in the mathematical name another name than Vic theorem, but which is equivalent to Vic theorem, which states that if this is a Gaussian weight, so the exponential of a quadratic form, then the expectation of these products of an even pair of random variables. So those are random variables in this path integral, but they are correlated. It's just the sum over all possible pairings of the product of the two-point correlation. So this object is simply this object. This object is just the sum over all pairings in, of course, m pairs of the products over the pairs of phi of x for one pair, phi of x for the other pair. And it's a general property of any expectation value of Gaussian random variables, but provided the theorem is a bit more complicated if phi is non-zero, but since, so this means here that phi is zero, phi of x1 is zero, and from that all odd pairs, and then you get this. So this theorem about Gaussian random variable is going to be the Vic theorem in quantum field theory. Okay. So I can show you this theorem for a Gaussian random variable if you like. It's easy to show. But if all of you are familiar with this, if you have seen that before, or if you have seen this in the front end or in the statistical mechanics, that's okay. So you want to prove it? Okay. Okay, so the proof, okay, so instead of considering an infinite number of random variables, let me consider a finite number of random variable that I'm going to call phi a. A goes from 1 to some capital N. This is not the same than here. Okay, and the probability distribution is just given by exponential of minus 1/2 phi a k a b phi b, where k a b, that I'm going to, so this is a matrix, is a symmetric positive real matrix. Okay. And I showed you, in fact, using this notation yesterday, that if you have this, the expectation value of phi A, phi B is just the AB matrix element of the inverse of the matrix K that can denote it KAB. Okay. Well, let's call it GAB. Not otherwise, it's confusing. So this is a two-point, two variables correlator. Okay. And of course, since K is symmetric positive, phi A is equal to 0. Okay. So now let us consider, so I want to consider the expectation value of phi A1, phi A2, up to phi An. And here this is a small n, which is defined as integral products over A of d phi a, exponential minus 1/2, and I'm going to denote this k times, I'm sorry, phi times k times phi. This is just shortened notation for that. And then I have phi a, phi a1, phi a n, divided by the same integral, exponential of minus 1/2 of phi k phi. Okay. We know this is just the determinant of k to the power minus 1 r. Okay. So, in order to prove what I'm going to say that, let me consider a generating function. So, I introduced a vector that I'm going to call ga, which is not a random variable, but which is going to be what you call a source term. It's a variable that we are going to play with. And I would like to compute what is the expectation value of exponential of GA phi A, where I am summing over the A's. And I call this Z of G. So G is a vector. So this is a function of a vector. Okay. So you see, it's just a generalization of the partition function. The partition function is the expectation. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm going to compute. I'm sorry. Z of G is not the expectation value of this. Z of G is the same integral integral products over d phi a, but exponential of minus 1/2 of phi, so let me careful, phi a k a b phi b plus g a phi a. Well, let's write C because it's not the same indices, but and the summation is over repeated indices is understood. Okay. I want to compute this integral, which is now a function of g. Well, that's easy. You just make a change of variable by writing that change of variable. And here, I hope I won't make a mistake. Write that phi a is some phi prime a plus the inverse of this. Yes, that's G A B times G B. Okay, I make this change variable. So this is a random variable, we integrate. This is a random variable, this is just a constant. Okay, and when you do that, you make this change variable, of course. This change variable is made so that this term disappears. So we get that this is integral products over d phi prime a. And then you get exponential of minus 1/2 of phi prime a k a b phi b. Okay. And then this term disappears, but of course you have the product of this, which is times exponential of, and you can check that you get a plus 1/2, and you have GA times this inverse matrix GAB, GB. Okay. But now this doesn't depend on the random variable phi prime. I'm sorry, this is phi prime. So this gets out of the integral. And this is just the original partition function. So z of g, the function g of g, we know it. This is z, the original partition function, times exponential of 1/2 of gA, gAB, gB, which is just a function. Okay? So now, let me use this again. Now, we can just, we need just something else. We need that when we want to compute a correlation function, we can compute, we can get a phi a in this integral just by taking a derivative with respect to g of phi. So we can write that phi a1 is just 1 over z of g times the derivative, partial derivative with respect to g a1 of z of g. And once we have done that, you set g equals 0 in order to get just exponential and no g term. And check that phi of a1 phi of a2 is just 1 over z of g times 2 partial derivative with respect to g a1 d over d g a2 at g equals 0, etc. Phi a1 up to phi an is 1 over z of g. Then you pile up the partial derivative, and this was n z of g at g equals 0. But now we know what this function is. It's just an exponential. Okay. So let's do this. Well, first, of course, the one of the z in front of that disappears. So for the first derivative, we get, we can either take a derivative with respect to the first g of the second g, so we get g GA1B, GB, and the rest once when you set G equals 0. At G equals 0, well, you have this exponential. Oh, but the exponential gets, okay, at G equals 0, which is 0, because there is a G here. But before setting g equals 0, if you do this, now, you take two derivatives with respect to this. So one derivative, what is d over dga1, d over dga2 of exponential of 1 half of, and I'm going to write this just g capital gi. OK, that's my standard notation. So this is this of this quantity of so of g ga2 times b gb times exponential of 1 half of gi g gi. I'm sorry, I'm French. So in French, this is called G and this is called G. So I always have a tendency called G and G, but this is G and this is G. Sorry. Okay, so we have to do that. And when you take the second derivative, either you apply it here, you get that B has to be equal to A1. So you get GA2 A1. Or you apply it here, and you get a second g times gi, so you get plus gA2b gb times gA1c gc. But this disappears when you set g equals 0. Gi equals 0. So it remains only this term. Okay? So now you repeat. If you now have d over dg, d over dg, d over dg, d over dg of exponential of gi, of exponential gi, g, gi, okay, either you do this. Of course, and you have the exponential in addition. Exponential of 1 half of gi g I. Again, the last two, either you apply them here, or you apply them here. And when you apply them here, you get a second G. If you apply them here and here, you get a product of two G. But you may apply the first one to this G or to this G. So you get three terms. So let me see if you have A1, A2, A3, A4. You see? So if you apply DGA3, DGA4 to this term, you can only derive things inside this. So you get GA2, A1, GA4, A3. And if you apply d over dga3, d over dga4 to this term, either you apply d over dga3 to this g and the derivative with respect to g4 to this one, so you get ga2 a3, ga1 a4, or you apply d over dga3 to this g and d over dga4 to this g. So you get G A2 A4 G A, I'm sorry, G A1, A3. You see? So you get the product of two G, but you get, you have three terms, one, two, three, four, and this is this pairing, this product of two pairing. This is this product of two pairings, and this is the last possible pairing, which is one with three and two with four. Okay. And if you are a bit patient, you see that this goes everywhere. This continues. Okay? So this is the proof. Okay. So now let me. Well, either I erase this or. Well, I prefer to have this. So let me go back. Yeah. Okay. I keep this so that you have the proof in mind. And I apply this to the free field. So this argument, this reasoning, you know, this proof. Oh, I still have time here, so I can still have space. So let me go that. So this is going to be So this is going to be so this works also for phi. So phi is an infinite collection of random variables, but it's still Gaussian. So the theorem applies. If you are a mathematician, you are going to feel to fix a few things, but okay. But this is still valid, this result. Okay. So this is called Vick theorem. Okay. So this means that, well, exactly from what I've wrote. Now I want to compute the expectation value of phi at four different points. Okay, this is going to be the sum over the four pairings. So exactly the first pairing is this one. So this is going to be phi of x1, x2 times phi of x3. I of x4 plus second pairing x1 with x3, phi of x1, phi of x3 times the expectation of value of phi of x2 and phi of x4 plus the third pairing, phi of x1, phi of x4 times phi of x2. Phi of x3. And that's it. Okay. And of course, this can be represented graphically because if you represent draw a line between a point x1 and a point x2, and say that this represents the two-point function. Okay. This means that this object that I can represent by something that I want to compute between the point 1, 2, 3, and 4 decomposes into these terms, which is this. Plus these terms, which is this times this, plus the last one, which is this times this. Of course, this is just a diagrammatic representation of this, And of course, this is the famous Feynman. Diagram presentation that comes out also from the path integral formulation. Okay. So I did this for the Euclidean theory, but now, since we know how we can Vic rotate and go back to the correlation function in physical space-time, in Minkowski space-time, of course, all this which is pure algebra remains valid. So, going from, finally, going from Euclidean space to Minkowski space, we recover Vic theorem for vacuum expectation value of time ordered products of field operator with an arbitrary number of operator as a sum of the pairings, the products of the pairs of vacuum expectation value of time ordered products of two phis, which is what you have been explained and obtained in by canonical quantization, I think. Okay. So everything is fine now, because we get the same endpoint time ordered product, vacuum expectation value of operators. And out of this, you can reconstruct all the state of the theory. Because in a quantum field theory, you know that you can reconstruct basically any states by applying a product of phi, products of creation, and then playing an alienation operator to the vacuum. That's the Fock space construction. And you can reconstruct the scalar products of any two states by, well, first, this state is obtained by some phi. And then this one is obtained by applying some phi to this one. And we know to construct all of them. So we get all the states, all their scalar products. So you reconstruct the Fock space, so the Hilbert space of the theory, out of the correlation functions that come out from Vic theorem and functional integral. That's the logic, which works, of course, neatly for a free theory, a non-interacting theory. So everything is fine. Fock space that were constructed, in fact, exactly by the same way in a canonical quantization. You obtained it by functional integral. Okay. Okay. What can I say more? Okay, I can just say something else. Well, it's just, in some sense, it's an exercise. So we have seen that, of course, for n equal 2, there is one pairing. For n equal 4, there are three pairings. So n equal 2, one pair, pairings. For n equal 4, we have three pairings. This is going to grow vastly. And if I am not mistaken, I think maybe it's an exercise that we have to do, but in n equal 2m, then you have, I think, factorial 2m divided by factorial m times 2 to the power m pairings. This is going to grow quickly. Well, let me check, because I know the results for m equal 3. For m equal 3, you get, so n equals 6. This is m equal 3, and therefore you get factorial 6 divided by factorial 3 divided by 2 to the power 3. So this is 6 times 5 times 3, times 4 divided by 8. So this is 3 times 5, which is 15, which is, you can check. Okay. So the number of pairing, of course, grows, and in fact, it grows like factorial with a number of factor with a number of points. Okay. Yes, you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question about over there where you're constructing states out of fields.
Yes.
So you're saying that you can construct any state just by applying fields to the vacuum, right?
Yes.
Can it be only fields at one time slice, or does it have to be any?
I think it has to be several. Well, you can imagine it. If you rewrite the term of creation operator, they are defined at, independently of the time. But I think but in some sense, on the other hand, they are defined at for the whole space, because it's the AK or the A dagger K. Leaves are labeled by position, by momentum space. So they correspond to creating a plane wave which lives on the whole space. So one also works. This is just a very imprecise argument. So I think that in general, if you have the vacuum state, you have in your space time to apply things in different places. This is space time. This is space time. X. I mean, just I have phi of x. I have some phi of x with the x spread a bit in some finite chunk of space. But there are some theorems that states precisely that you can do that. But you have to look in books about what is called axiomatic. Quantum field theory to have the precise mathematical results. So axiomatic quantum field theory is a way to formulate quantum field theory using basically only operator and space-time, and to make some clean mathematics for quantum field theory. But it's not another quantum theory. So there are things called reconstruction theorem and various objects. But it works. Trust me. Trust me when I say, but I don't remember the exact details. If I knew some, but not all of them. But that's the logic. Let's see. That's how things work.
Because at one time slice, the operators live, fill the whole Hilbert space, right?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, yeah, in axiom quantum physics, you can have the operator, so you have your space-time, and if you can work out, yeah, you can have operator in an arbitrary thin time slice. So that's enough. Yeah. No. So if you know a bit, that's true. In fact, in a not very precise mathematical sense, you can add all the phi everywhere on the time slice. But since it works like it, it's going also to work if you have the phi elsewhere.
Okay.
So it's this description, this construction may be very redundant. You may have different products of phi that give the same state at the end as you. Because each phi is the sum of creation and annihilation operator. So if you have different things, you can always reorganize by commutation relation to have get rid of all the annihilation, get only the creation, and move them somewhere, you are done. I think that's the logic. So formally, I think you can always, you can always have all the phi at the same point. But you are going to see, I think later on in the course that's waiting for you, you are going to see situation where people prefer to deal with operators at different points in space-time. For instance, especially in conformal field theory, in two-dimensional conformal field theory, using the fact that you can consider operator at different points, etc., is something very, very useful. So this game, this general game, is going to be useful in some, for some, doing some physics. Okay. Okay. So I think that's all what I wanted to say about. At that stage about the free field. Okay, I have only 10 minutes left. So maybe I could start to explain the interacting field theory, but I think there is no point in just introducing it in 10 minutes because then I'm going to have to repeat it more. So maybe I can speak about just a point which might be a subtlety, but which is important. Okay, I start to have using a lot of blackboards. So, let me just discuss on a very crude level a concept which is important, and in fact, a concept that you have, I think, met in QFT1, which is a concept of what's called composite operators. And normal products. I think you have met the concept of normal products of creation and annihilation operator in canonical quantization. You consider products of two operators which have A and A dagger, and you change the operator by moving all the creation to the, I don't remember if it's the left or the right. It depends from your point of view or mine. Yeah. Okay, so there is the same similar feature in canonical quantization by path integral. But let's consider now that, okay, I've defined all the correlation function of the field operator in canonical quantization. So I've constructed, so out of 5x in the functional integral, I've considered field operator. So this is a random variable, and this is a field operator. And now, of course, these are not the only field operator of the theory. Of course, these are not the only operators of the theory. For instance, you may ask, can we define the square 5x? So let's look at what are the properties
properties of phi squared of x in the functional integral. Okay. Well, if you remember just only what I discussed yesterday, you expect this object, considered as a random variable, to be something very problematic. Because remember, this object is a random variable, very singular, which is basically either minus infinity or plus infinity. So on the average, it can be something finite. But if this is a random variable which is plus or minus infinity, this is a random variable which is always plus infinity. So it's not defined. It doesn't have an average which is finite. Okay, so average. So average of phi squared of x equal plus infinity. Okay, so this is something which is just unwavering argument. But remember, we have seen that phi of x, phi of y, the two-point correlation function of phi of x, behaves when y goes to x as x minus y to the power 2 minus d. This is the ultra short distance singularity. So this also goes to infinity when y equals x. So this is the calculation confirms that the expectation value of phi of x squared is not well defined. Basically, so the expectation value of phi of x squared is infinite. Problem. Okay. And this is just the expectation value of this object. But now let's consider, maybe you could say it's just a property of the matrix element of the vacuum to vacuum matrix element. So maybe the other matrix elements of this operator are finite. No, all matrix elements are infinite. And why is it so? That's because all matrix elements of phi squared operator can be constructed out of expectation value of phi of x1, phi of xn, and let's assume here that we have phi squared of x at the point 0. Okay. So I have. So let us consider this. By Wick's theorem, this is by Wick's theorem a sum of pairings. And you have two kinds of pairings. You have the pairings where you have a sum of pairings. Okay. Products of phi phi. And you have two kinds of pairings. Here you have, in fact, n plus 2 points. You have x1, xn, x0, and x0. Okay, so you have two kinds of pairings. You have the pairings where one of the x0 is paired to one of these one, and the other one is paired to one of these one. So you have the pairings of the forms phi of z, x0, phi of some x, another phi of x0, phi of some x, and then you have a product of phi phi. Okay? And then you have the pairings where the first x0 is paired with the other one. Not this is phi squared of x naught. And then you have a product of phi, phi. Okay. So in other words, this means that if I want to construct a correlation function where I have 2x naught, means that I have here x naught here, and here I have x1 up to xn. See, in this Feynman integral diagram representation, I have to consider all those pairings. So all the pairings that can obtain like that can be written as first as the safe pairing, where we have and basically this x naught instead is just something that we have x naught, and we have one of the pairing with some of the x, and the other is a pairing with the other x. And then we have the things where we have this pairing, x naught, and then we have the other pairings. Okay? And here, this just is a drawing for representing all the possible pairings. So this term is okay, because this correlation function, this is a product of pairings where a priori all the points are different. So this is okay. Do I have a green? No, I have no green. Choke? Okay. So this is nice. Finite. This term is also finite. But this term is infinite. Okay. So all. So this is that, of course, all these correlation functions, this matrix element of phi squared, are infinite. So yeah, this is divergent, infinite. But the infinity is just contained in this term. So this is a dangerous term. And in this dangerous term, you see that only x naught is there, and all the other x are not there. See? So now let us consider a slightly different operator. I consider the operator, the object, the random variable, which is phi of x, phi of y. And so this object, and I subtract this. So I subtract minus the expectation value of phi of x, phi of y. So this is x naught, in fact, in our calculations. Let's call it x naught, times, so this is a number, so times one. So I consider that one is a random variable. The number one is a random variable that has a zero variance. So this is a random variable. In the functional integral. This is a variable. It's a random variable that do not fluctuate. Which is not fluctuating. So it's a very simple random variable. And this is just a number. This is a function g of x0 minus y. So as long as y is different from x naught, this is a perfectly well-defined random variable. You see? And let me define this. Okay, so this is a random variable. Now let me consider the limit when y goes to x naught of this random variable. Okay? I don't know if this random variable is well behaved or not well behaved, but let me call it phi square of x naught with just two double dots. Okay, so this is a random variable. Okay. So now, okay, so that's my definition of a random variable. It's a limit of some object which are well defined, but we know that the limit of this random variable is singular and this object is singular. So this is a definition. I define this. And now let me compute the expectation value in the field theory by functional integral of a product of field operator times this random variable. Okay. Is this finite or is this infinite? This is finite because this is equal to this. So this object, the subtraction of this, just subtract the badly behaved singular part. So you see that the correlation function, the matrix element of this object, are well behaved. So this random variable to correspond to some well-defined local operator in canonical quantization. And this well-defined local operator in canonical quantization is nothing but the normal ordered product of two phi. This is a normal order. Product of two capital phi operator at the same point. I'm sorry, this is the crucial point, as usual. Ah, no, that's because I'm not. Oh, I'm sorry, I cannot move this. Oh, I can move this. No, that's perhaps not a good idea. Maybe I can do this. Okay. So you see, so there is a way to define operators which are potentially singular because they are at singularity at short distance by subtracting the divergent part. Okay. And that's in fact the first example of normalization. In the sense that we are dealing with the infrared, the ultraviolet singular behavior in this quantum field theory. And we are going to see that next week when we are going to discuss the renormalization theory. But you see, already for the quantum free field, which is non-interacting, there are ultraviolet singularity, and you have to subtract singular parts in order to define these operators, which naively defined in the functional integral, are ultraviolet divergent. So you have to be more careful when you define products of operator, but this is doable. And of course, this can be done for products of 3, 4, 5, etc. So this game can be repeated for all operators. Okay? Okay. Thank you.